Well, there we are. That is the new single from The Corgis. The best thing you can do is to love someone. The best thing you can do is get them on the radio and find out what it's all about. I've got James Warren, that distinctive voice from The Corgis, and Al Steele from The Corgis as well, on the line. Afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon.
Hi, James. Let's start with you. I've got to go back, if I may. Most people, yeah. if you say The Corgis, most people would say Everybody's Got to Learn Sometime. And goodness me, that has been covered so many times. For me personally, as a radio DJ, If I Had You just really works. What was going through your head when you were writing those two songs? And did you realise 40 odd years later just how popular those would be?
Oh, gosh. Okay, so... I didn't write If I Had You. It was written by my partner at that time, Andy Davis. What a great song. And then I wrote Everyone's Got to Learn Sometime. I think we were trying to write what we thought might be radio-friendly tracks, because before that we'd been in a band called Stackridge, which was a kind of very eccentric sort of rock band and never broke through into the mainstream, not very commercial. So we thought when we started The Corgis, why don't we try a different tack? Let's deliberately try and write songs that we think are going to be radio friendly. So that was the whole basis of If I Had You and Everybody's Got to Them Sometime.
Okay. Can I ask you as well? You're going to get sick to death of this question. Why is it spelt with a K? did the Queen or somebody say, oh, excuse me, you can't do that. I've got corgis over here. You're not calling yourselves that.
No, but funnily enough, the Queen does feature in the reason why we called ourselves the Corgis. Okay, so the K came about because we thought there aren't many bands that have names that begin with K. So why don't we change it from C to K? Because there's only really Kraftwerk or Kool and the Gang. So we thought having a K as the initial letter might be to our advantage.
Very
clever. That was one thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it was a whole riff on the Queen's dogs. We found that very amusing, you know, the Queen and the Corgis kind of thing. And we thought like a one-word name might be more memorable than, you know, like, I don't know, some elongated sort of thing.
Sure.
So... but that was the whole reason.
Excellent. I've cleared that up at last. I've waited 40 years for the answer to that. Now, you are one of these bands where if you read your Wikipedia page, my goodness me, it's like, well, then we did this and then he left and then suddenly got in touch and then we toured. But we weren't touring as that. We were touring as something else, but we used to do the Corgis.
Yeah, so yeah.
It's a real story of a rock and roll band in my book, in that you're never the same for more than 10 minutes. But Al, you joined in about 1990 and you've been around since then. You joined when the Corgis were touring back in that day.
Yeah, back there we weren't doing many dates, but it was for the album This World's for Everyone, which was a much more kind of modern kind of transatlantic sound, with big anthems, This World's for Everyone and One Life, you know, stuff that again at that point we thought, oh, we could hear this on the radio. So we were doing some dates to promote that album. So that's when I first met James. Obviously I knew of the Corgis. I was in covers band doing Corgi songs, you know. But we kept in touch since then, and we were doing a separate writing project ourselves, just again trying to write for other people to maybe get covers somewhere. And James was working on a solo album at the same time, and I just got a little bit involved in that, and we ended up going, oh, well, we need to promote the solo album. So it was initially like bandied about, oh, should we go out with some tracks, just the two of us or something? And eventually it was like, nah, tracks are not going to be anywhere near as good as a band. So we put this mammoth 8-piece band together to promote James's solo album. But, you know, it became very evident the band sounded great. Why not tour as the Corgis? Because that's really what everyone wanted.
It is, and it is that distinctive voice. And I've got to say, James, you know, here we are 40-odd years on, and that voice is still, you know, I'm sure as when you're in the shower and you're singing, everybody's going to learn something, I'm sure it sounds the same. Is that just luck of the draw, or have you done, you know, a particular exercise or something that keeps that voice so fresh? Because that is a young-sounding voice.
Yeah, I think it's luck of the draw, definitely. But also, I suppose, I've never sort of gone into a sort of mad sort of rock lifestyle. You know, I've always, I've been, I don't know, vegetarian, you know, and not, I haven't drunk very much or anything like that for like 40 odd years. Maybe that helps, I don't know. But I think essentially it's just having lucky genes, you know, not Levi's, I mean genes as in genes.
Genetically well bred, yes.
Yes, exactly. It's just one of those lucky things, you know. I mean, this time next year, my voice might have become like Tom Waits. It might all go to pieces. I don't know, you know, but at the moment, it's okay.
It is. It's sounding really good. Tell us about the new single, the new album. You've got some collaborations on the go in there, but that kind of really seems like your thing anyway. You tend to rope musicians in, the two of you, when you need them and just whatever gives the vibe. But here we are, 30 years on since your last studio album. Where's this heading?
Well, it began unintentionally, really, during lockdown, when all of the musicians were saying, there's no gigs, there's nothing we can do. Well, it was pretty unlike us to not do anything. So we started a remote writing project initially with a guy from Liverpool who runs a band called Exhibit One. And it was a bit like a relay where one person would start writing a song and they'd pass it on to the other one. They wouldn't get any say in what the other person did, and he would then pass it on to the third person. And because I was the person in the studio who was trying to pull it all together, I'm trying to pull these strands together. But it was fascinating. And it was just like, we went, oh, this is so much fun. And I think James, just on a phone call, he went, do you know, when lockdown's over, we could make a really great Corgis album using this kind of method. Well, we didn't continue using that method, but we did for two songs. And then it was like, James says, I've got these ideas. And I'm going, well, I've got this idea. And I've got these lyrics. So that's how it originated. And as things started to open up again a little bit, you know, when we got to last summer, we started to physically get together. And sometimes just writing next to each other in the same room. I remember the verse from Bringing Back the Spirit of Love was like 10 minutes before James had to go. He went, well, let's do it now, shall we?
Seasoned songwriters, the two of you. And you mentioned there about getting out and about. Lockdown starting to ease. We will be seeing you, I understand.
Yeah, we've got dates beginning in September. So it'll be fantastic to be out there actually performing again. And also in December, our album should be available from like sort of all around about August time.
Earlier than that, July, middle of July.
Well, you've got a bit of a...
about the 16th or
there's
something.
A sort of mixed bag about the way you're releasing this, isn't it? The vinyl comes out and then there's a CD comes out. You're kind of trickling. I mean, back in the early days, it was, there's your LP, get on with it. But there's all these different formats now, isn't there?
It's a modern way to do it. Essentially, this has kind of backfired on us. I'll tell you why now. But initially it was like, well, if we release the vinyl and everything all at the same time, then people might go, oh, can we be bothered buying the vinyl? We just stick the CD. So we thought, a cunning plan, we'll release the vinyl first. And if people go, I really want the album now and I can't decide whether to buy the vinyl, then, oh, what the hell, I'll just buy the vinyl. And so then it was like 2 weeks later, we'd release the deluxe CD because we wanted people to buy the deluxe CD, you know, rather than the standard one. Then 2 weeks later, the standard CD and then streaming, you know, Spotify and Apple and all of the other things. However, that has backfired on us because unbeknownst to us is a mammoth backlog for vinyl. There's a worldwide shortage of it. And we didn't know this. I mean, like all musicians, we are still mastering right up until the 11th hour. Yes. And they go, right, quick, get it to the duplicators. And we go, get it to the duplicators. And they go, yeah, it looks a bit more like December for the vinyl. And so we ended up hunting around all over the place. We found someone we reckon can deliver in October, mid-October. But that's about the earliest we can get it. So that's very annoying. So we are going to move the double CD forward, and we'll make sure everyone's got at least a download version, and anyone that's bought anything has got something to play at least.
It is so exciting to get bands like you back, because you know there's this whole group of youngsters who seem to think that the whole of the 70s and the whole of the 80s can be on a double CD. And it's just not, is it? And okay, you're there with Everybody's Got to Learn Sometime, but there's all the other stuff as well. And it's a great opportunity for people to rediscover your music, hear the new music, and rediscover that back catalogue. It's going to be great, isn't it?
Oh, I hope so, yeah. I mean, we're really looking forward to it, yeah. I mean, and the 60s and 70s, yeah, as you were saying, it's just so full of great music. And, yeah, I mean, like, at the moment, I do a little radio show here in Bath where I do, like, my selection of 60s and 70s sort of hits that I particularly like for an hour on a local Bath station. And, yeah, it amazes me all over again how many songs I think are really strong, really good, you know. Mm. So, yeah, that period was immense, I think, for Bobby's.
I mean, I think with this album, we've tried to really go back to a bit more of a retro sound and the way things are, which is one of the reasons we wanted to release it on vinyl. It's a concept album, man.
Ah.
There's no gaps between any of the tracks. They all run straight from one end to another. And we remember the days when we would sit and listen to an album. Mm. We wouldn't pick out two tracks from the album and only listen to that, like these guys do with streaming these days. They go, yeah. Oh, yeah, there's a new album. I like that one and that one and that one.
Yeah.
You'd sit down, put the record on and listen to the whole album from beginning to end. You wouldn't even talk to each other usually. You'd just sit there in silence, marveling at how great this was.
And you had the sleeve notes to look at and all the picture books and things that used to come. And it was a real immersive experience, wasn't it?
We have all that. We didn't want to be limited to little CD sleeve notes. So we've got two big posters that go in each side of the vinyl.
Fantastic.
So you can read the lyrics, you know, it's really big. And there's another one side about the making of it, but it's back to the days where you can actually get it and put the poster on your wall.
This is what we want. This is what we've been waiting for. They have been around for 40-odd years. After 30 years, we finally got a studio album out of them again. James Al from the Corgis, thank you so much for talking to us and good luck with everything.
Thank you.
Good to speak to you, Neil.